Hello there, I'm Rob. I'm producer on the Black Country Talking News. And this week's edition is for the 21st of July, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Colin, Craig, Helen, Ian, Simon, Angela, Liz, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a feature on pronunciation, the weather, Craig's Black Country joke book, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. We start this week with information regarding the lifting of COVID restrictions.
From Monday the 19th of July, most legal COVID-19 restrictions will be lifted. You will no longer need to socially distance from people outside of your household or support bubble. Limits on the number of people you can meet no longer apply. However, in order to minimise risk at a time of high prevalence, you should limit close contact with those you do not live with and increase close contact gradually. The government will no longer instruct people to work from home, however, a gradual return over the summer is expected and recommended. The legal requirement to wear face coverings will be lifted. However, the government expects and recommends that people wear face coverings in crowded areas such as public transport. Limits on the number of people who can attend weddings, civil partnerships, funerals and other life events, including receptions and celebrations, will be lifted. The requirement for table service at live events and restrictions on singing and dancing will be removed. You should follow guidance for weddings and funerals to reduce risk and protect yourself and others. Restrictions on group sizes attending communal worship will also be lifted. All remaining closed businesses and venues, such as nightclubs and adult entertainment venues, can reopen. Capacity limits at sporting, entertainment and business events will be lifted. Hospitality venues such as pubs, restaurants and bars will no longer be required to provide table service or follow social distancing rules. Here at Beacon, the safety of our members, staff, volunteers and the wider Beacon family remains our top priority. Therefore, we will still have COVID-19 precautions in place, ensuring we can welcome you safely to our centres and shops. For now, our staff and volunteers will continue to wear face masks unless exempt, when they are within 2 metres of someone else, in a communal area or in our shops. Staff and volunteers at our centres and shops will also still be required to undertake regular lateral flow testing and additional cleaning rotas remain in place. We're also asking that everyone visiting our shops and centres thinks of others and remembers that wearing a face mask could help in keeping us all safe. We thank you for your continued patience and understanding during this time.
Thanks again, Simon. Now, before we head into the news, we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you've got to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think about that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside the usual quiz answers. Now, however, we head over to Ian, Ed, Liz, Angela and Christine, who have for us our first block of local news.
Dudley is amongst a host of towns across the UK hoping to become a city next year. Towns have been invited to bid for city status as part of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations next year, with as many applications being welcomed as possible. A limit on successful areas has not been set, and ministers say decisions will be made based on the strengths of the applications. Other hopefuls include Reading, Swindon and Milton Keynes, which is hoping to make it fourth time lucky after missing out in 2000, 2002 and 2012. Dudley missed out in 2012 after applying to be named a city for the Diamond Jubilee. Wolverhampton became a Millennium City in 2000. Traditionally, a location needs to have a population of 300,000 in order to be considered for city status. The Dudley Borough, including other towns such as Stourbridge and Halesowen, meets this criteria. Gaining city status has helped transform the fortunes of Wolverhampton over the last two decades, and City Council leader Ian Brookfield said the title of City is key in opening up funding opportunities. Wolverhampton became a Millennium City in 2000 and parts of it have undergone significant regeneration in the years since. Dudley is now hoping to follow in the footsteps of its neighbour by being granted the same honour as part of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations next year. Councillor Brookfield said, "I wish Dudley all the best with its bid."
A senior minister has hit back at claims that sky-high government housing targets are forcing councils into greenbelt development. Council leaders in the four Black Country boroughs say there is no way they can meet a target of 76,000 homes by 2039 without digging up the greenbelt. They have come under fire after signing off the draft Black Country plan, which proposes that swathes of the greenbelt are carved up for more than 7,000 homes and nearly 50 acres of employment space. Now, Housing Secretary Robert Jenrick has called on council chiefs to strain every sinew to protect green sites, insisting there was plenty of scope across the region for brownfield development. It comes after the council leaders demanded meetings with ministers over the homes target, which Dudley council leader Patrick Harley said currently left a choice between a housing shortfall or building on the green belt. Asked if the government was demanding too many homes from the councils, Mr Jenrick said, "No, we need to build more homes as we've got to help young people and those on low incomes onto the housing ladder. This year, we are seeing housing prices rising sharply, so it's more important than ever that we try to build those homes. I firmly believe there are still opportunities in the Black Country to be building on brownfield land and in town centres and on high streets. We will do everything we can to support the area to do that and have already invested in the Brownfield Fund and we're backing the Brownfield Institute." Mr Jenrick added, "My advice to local councils would be to make sure that you are maximising out the brownfield opportunities before you even think about the green belt."
Hundreds of 999 callers in the West Midlands have been made to wait in a queue over recent weeks because there have not been enough ambulances to be sent out to them. Under pressure, West Midlands Ambulance Service has been struggling to cope with the number of calls it has been receiving since last month. At its busiest times, it has resulted in calls being prioritised as they have not been able to respond immediately to all of them. Well-placed sources said at the peak there were 411 emergency callers waiting in a queue without ambulances available to be sent to them. It has also been claimed there has been a reluctance to request support from volunteer services, such as St John's Ambulance. They received the highest number of calls in its history last Monday, more than 6,400, way more than would be expected on New Year's Eve. 19 of its 20 busiest days have come in the last month. Bosses said a big part of the problem was frustrated people who had already dialed 999, calling back to find out where their ambulance was. On Monday, July the 12th, only 3,610 of the 6,406 were for a single incident, with many other people calling back. A spokesman for West Midlands Ambulance Service said, "If you have called 999 and an ambulance has been arranged for you, please do not call back asking for a time of arrival, as this could delay us speaking to another patient who needs our help. Only call back if the patient's condition worsens or you no longer need our help."
Train passengers in the West Midlands have been warned of short notice cancellations due to an increasing number of staff members being told to self-isolate. West Midlands Trains issued the warning after the number of staff having to self-isolate by the NHS Test and Trace app quadrupled in recent weeks. It comes after reports revealed more than 500,000 alerts telling people to self-isolate were sent across England and Wales during the first week of July. A spokesman for the company which runs West Midlands Railway and London North Western Railway services said staff self-isolating has led to trains being cancelled at short notice and fewer carriages being available on some services. Railway chiefs have also urged people to continue to wear face coverings unless they are exempt, despite government guidance no longer making it mandatory. Johnny Wiseman, Customer Experience Director at West Midlands Railway, said even though COVID restrictions are easing from Monday, the message is, in crowded spaces, wear a face covering out of respect for others. Meanwhile, on the buses, National Express West Midlands has said it expects customers to wear face coverings while travelling on their buses, unless they are exempt, despite the law no longer making it mandatory. A spokesman from the company said, "Following government guidance and in line with all modes of transport in the West Midlands, National Express expects customers to wear face coverings while travelling on our buses unless they are exempt."
Spending on filling potholes and other road repairs in a Black Country borough has dropped by more than £2 million since 2018, figures have shown. More than £7.7 million went into potholes, resurfacing and other repairs across Dudley that year. But the figure fell to £5.2 million in 2019 and £5.3 million in 2020. Dudley Council said the drop in spending was down to a fall in funding for roads from the government rather than the authority putting less cash into projects. Bosses said an extra £1 million on its annual budget had been invested tackling potholes this year. Figures released following a Freedom of Information request showed more than £7 million was spent each year between 2016 and 2018 before spending dropped. There was also a big drop in spend on resurfacing last year, when the total of £584,000 was down from £1.7 million in 2019, the data showed. Other projects included highway structural maintenance and footpath works. Council bosses at Conservative-run Dudley Council said they would continue to invest in improving roads. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "Our annual budget is usually around £4 million, but occasionally we receive favourable funding from government, as in 2017. This year, we have invested an extra £1 million into tackling potholes on residential roads as a part of a pothole purge. We will continue listening to local people and improving the highways for borough residents."
Now it's time to head over to Helen, who has for us, as always, this week's Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. How are you all? Well, as usual, it's been a busy old week at Beacon. We're absolutely delighted to let you know, though, about the launch of our new Heart of Beacon campaign. The past 16 months have been tough for us all, but one thing that's given us hope when we needed it the most is our amazing supporters. Together, more than £100,000 for people with sight loss has been raised. Thank you. Our centre costs around £1.2 million to run each year, and more people than ever need our support, with the pandemic resulting in people with sight loss feeling lonely and less confident. Our supporters have helped us get through one of the most difficult times in our 146-year history, and now we're hoping they can support us again so that we can thrive. To make sure our donors are forever part of a Beacon family, we're creating a mural that will display the names of everyone who makes a donation during July and August in our centre reception in Sedgley. This will be in the shape of a heart that will grow bigger with each donation in honour of our amazing local community support. It's easy to donate to the Heart of Beacon Appeal. Firstly, you can do it online by heading to www.beaconvision.org/heart-of-beacon. That's www.beaconvision.org/heart-of-beacon. You can also donate £10 by texting Heart of Beacon, that's all one word, Heart of Beacon, to 70085. Did you know that a donation of £10 could support an hour's recording of a talking newspaper, which hopefully you know offers a friendly voice and weekly news updates for more than 200 local people? If you're donating via text message and would like to feature in our mural, please send us an email to supportus@beaconvision.org. That's supportus@beaconvision.org. And don't forget, text costs £10 plus one standard rate message. Also this week, as you know, new COVID-19 guidance has come into force, and we're encouraging anyone who visits Beacon to spread kindness, not COVID. Our staff and volunteers will be continuing to wear face masks for now, and we ask if you visit us, please think of others. Remember, wearing a mask protects those around you, and keeping your distance might help someone vulnerable stay safe. And clean hands, well, we'll still have hand sanitizer available at our centres and stores, because who doesn't want clean hands, eh? You can get an audio update on the latest COVID-19 guidance on our website, www.beaconvision.org/news. That's www.beaconvision.org/news. Don't forget, you can also still take part in our virtual activities if you prefer. On July the 27th, we've got a guest speaker. That's Ruth Smith from Arthritis Action. And she'll be running a session on the condition and what support is available for people. Like all of our virtual activities, the session is free to join and can be accessed via Zoom or the telephone. To find out more or how to join in one of the sessions, call Kim Williams on 01902 880111. That's 01902 880111, or email kwilliams@beaconvision.org. That's it for this week. Hopefully I'll be back again soon to speak with you. Bye bye.
Thank you, Helen. Now, before we go into our next block of local news, we have the following message. The Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group is working with local GP practices across the region to look at ways in which technology can help to improve patient access to GP services and extend patient choice. Whether or not you have experienced video consultations or online consultations with your GP practice, we would like to hear from you and welcome your views and what you think about potentially accessing consultations in such ways. If you could please take a moment to take part in a short survey to help them understand what things are important to you and that you would want or expect from an online consultation, please visit tiny.cc/access-survey. Alternatively, if you prefer to discuss and complete the questionnaire by telephone, please contact their engagement team on 0121 612 1447 to arrange a callback. The Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group look forward to hearing from you. Up next, we hear some more local news. And starting us off, we have Ed.
Ministers are planning to erect a giant union flag in Wolverhampton city centre to mark the opening of a new government office. The enormous flag is set to be stationed on a pole standing more than 50 feet or 16 metres in height near the I&I development on Railway Drive. It is hoped the flag will be flying high for when the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government opens its new regional headquarters at the building in the coming weeks. It is understood that a bid for planning permission for the flag is set to be lodged with Wolverhampton Council. Its exact location is yet to be confirmed, although it is likely to be positioned on the corner of Ring Road, St David's. Ministers believe the flag will serve as a fitting permanent landmark for the new government base, which will feature a ministerial office and will operate alongside the existing London HQ. Around 150 staff are currently being recruited to work over two floors at the site, which was visited by Housing Secretary Robert Jenrick last week for a progress check. An event is being planned to mark the opening of the new headquarters.
Dudley Council is continuing its booking system for the tip over the summer months, with COVID-19 restrictions having been lifted. The booking system was introduced for the Household Waste Recycling Centre in Stourbridge during the height of lockdown. The system will stay in place for the immediate future, as council chiefs say it has helped to cut down on queues and made accessing the site easier and quicker. It will also allow the authority to ensure that only borough residents access the site and help prevent unauthorised traders and businesses from using the community facility. Parking is limited to 11 cars or 5 vans on site at any one time. Households aren't limited to the number of visits, but are encouraged to minimise bookings to 1 per week where possible to maximise the number of residents that can benefit from the site being open. 1 person per car is still recommended, although if additional people are required for unloading, this is allowed. No children or pets are advised. Social distancing is encouraged to help keep staff and visitors safe, and people can wear masks if they wish. Due to social distancing, no assistance for unloading can be provided, and users are asked to sort their waste before arrival. The reuse shop remains closed at present, but it is hoped that it will reopen soon.
A long-awaited plan to transform Wolverhampton's crumbling eye infirmary has suffered a major setback after the developer pulled out of the project. A deal had been agreed with the council's preferred developer, Great Space, and the site's owners to revamp the infamous eyesore on the edge of the city centre in Chapel Ash. But problems with funding have led to Great Space pulling out of the scheme. Site owner BZ Property Holdings said it had now managed to bring a new developer on board, but that the delay had pushed the development back by up to 18 months. It means it will be at least next year before any work starts on the site. Council bosses have been trying to get the rundown eye infirmary site redeveloped for years due to its key position on the gateway into the city centre on Compton Road, but have faced a series of hurdles. BZ Property said the City Council insisted on a fire-damaged Victorian clock tower being retained as part of the new development. It was particularly disappointing as a redevelopment plan had been pre-approved in principle by council bosses who supported the project. The development will be residential, though the number of apartments has not been confirmed. It will also feature supported living for older people. BZ Property Managing Director Zed Ahmed said, "The council insisted on the retention of the tower block building located towards the centre of the site, the same building that had previously sustained heavy fire and structural damage under the ownership of the NHS. In March this year, after a whole 18 months, Great Space failed to complete on the contract, sending us back to square one. This came as a huge disappointment to us and equally to Wolverhampton City Council, as their preferred choice of developer was unable to proceed with the redevelopment of the site."
One new coronavirus death has been confirmed in the region's hospitals in the latest figures released by NHS England. It means the total number of deaths announced in the Black Country, Staffordshire and Birmingham has increased to 7,396. On top of that, 1,508 people have died at care homes in the region after testing positive for COVID-19. NHS England confirmed a further 27 deaths in the country's hospitals in figures released on Friday. One death was announced at the University Hospitals of Birmingham NHS Foundation Trust, taking the total number of deaths to 2,640. The trust runs the Queen Elizabeth, Good Hope, Heartlands and Solihull hospitals. Overall, 807 patients have died at the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, 749 at the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, and 727 at the Walsall Healthcare NHS Trust. A total of 1,185 have died at the Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust and 1,394 have died at the University Hospitals of North Midlands NHS Trust. Meanwhile, a total of 68,474,146 vaccinations have been carried out across England to date, including first and second doses. In the Midlands, 7,156,979 first doses of the coronavirus vaccine has been administered, while 5,628,546 second doses have been carried out. The data includes vaccinations carried out between December the 8th and July the 15th.
Disused land, which has been a magnet for fly tipping, is to be transformed into new council houses. Dudley Council planners have given the green light for the 7 new properties to be built on the former garage site behind some houses on St George's Road. The homes will feature 3 2-bedroom, 3 3-bedroom and 1 4-bedroom properties with off-road parking. Objections were raised by people in 2 houses who raised concerns about the loss of direct access to their back gardens. But officers said the proposal was acceptable and have granted permission for the scheme with conditions. A report said, the site is presently a disused area of overgrown land and was previously used as a garage site. The surface consists of predominantly compacted roadstone or tarmac and areas of overgrown soft landscaping with large amounts of fly-tipped waste. It added, the principle of residential use of this site is considered to be acceptable. The development would make a positive contribution to the character of the area and would not have any detrimental impact on residential amenity or highway safety.
Now it's time to head over to Mina, who, as always, has the questions for this week's quiz.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers Did You Know feature, but for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. What facial feature is missing on the Mona Lisa? Question 2. Which book is stolen from libraries the most? Question 3. How many sick sheep did the sick sheikh have? Question 4. What animal cannot jump? Question 5. Who patented a paper bag making machine in 1871? And question 6. What did Stephanie Kowalik discover in 1966? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thank you for those questions, Mina. Now we have some more local news. And starting us off, we get to hear from Angela.
A number of services operated by Diamond Bus for Transport for West Midlands will terminate from next month. Diamond Bus has given notice to Transport for West Midlands to exit current partnership arrangements on August the 28th. It will include the 3132 Warsaw to Mossley and Lower Farm, 40 West Bromwich to Wensbury, 42 West Bromwich to Dudley and 43 West Bromwich to Bilston services. Diamond Bus will instead operate independently on the majority of the routes from August the 29th, offering a new service timetable. A spokesman for Diamond Bus said the decision was not an easy one to make. We believe in working collaboratively for the benefit of the passengers we serve. Prior to the COVID pandemic, the financial performance of the services involved had declined, and this decline was discussed as part of a conversation about reforming the then partnership services in late 2019 and has been part of subsequent conversations since. Diamond Bus will continue to operate independently on the majority of these routes from August the 29th, offering a new regular service timetable. Passengers will still be able to enjoy the same enhanced onboard Diamond services such as next stop screens and passenger Wi-Fi that were provided within the agreements and will be offered the best rate fares available on the Diamond Bus network. Diamond Bus will also be introducing a new range of tap and go fares. With tap and go, passengers can travel flexibly by just tapping on and off with their contactless payment card each time they travel, and the best value fares for journeys they have taken will be calculated.
Nearly two-thirds of working mothers in the West Midlands with primary school-aged children do not have sufficient childcare for the six-week school summer holidays, according to a new survey published by the Trades Union Congress. The situation is even worse for single mums in the West Midlands, with 4 in 5, or 80%, telling the TUC that they don't have adequate childcare for the upcoming holidays. Working mums across the public and private sectors in the West Midlands reported huge challenges in balancing their work and childcare, with 3 in 5, 61%, saying they would find managing childcare in the holidays more difficult this year than previously. Previous TUC research has shown that working mums have picked up the lion's share of the increase in caring responsibilities during the COVID-19 lockdowns and school closures. And this survey reveals that these school holidays will be yet another struggle for working mums. TUC Midlands Regional Secretary Lee Barron said, "Women have borne the brunt of the pandemic on the front line in key worker roles and at home. Working mums picked up the lion's share of caring responsibilities while schools were closed, with many sacrificing hours and pay to do so. But while restrictions may be lifting and ministers talk about us getting back to normal, working mums are still feeling the impact of the pandemic. Most mums told us they don't have enough childcare for the upcoming school holidays and are now facing a huge challenge managing their work and caring responsibilities this summer. It shouldn't be this difficult. If ministers don't act, we risk turning the clock back on generations of progress women have made at work."
A Wolverhampton MP has backed a bid for £20 million of government cash to build a new learning quarter in the city. Civic leaders in the city have put together the bid to ministers after trying to get cash for the ambitious project for more than a year. They were left disappointed when a round of funding awarded earlier this year fell short of the £50 million that they had hoped for. It is hoped the fresh application will allow the City Learning Quarter on the corner of Garrick Street and Bilston Street to be built. Stuart Anderson, MP for Wolverhampton South West, said, "I am delighted to support this bid to the government's Levelling Ups Fund. As a local MP, I have been calling on the government to ensure that young people in our city have access to excellent education, training and employment opportunities which equip them with the skills needed to lead fulfilling lives. If successful, the funding will help to realise the delivery of this shovel-ready project, and it will make a massive difference to everyday life through direct investment in skills and education. It will be transformational for young people, residents and communities in our city. The purpose-built education facility will be over 10,000 square metres and will provide a state-of-the-art learning environment for young people and adults in the city and pave the way for Wolverhampton College to move from its outdated Paget Road site, which has been identified as land to build much-needed housing."
The world's oldest toy shop has opened a branch in the Black Country. Toy brand Hamleys is the latest addition to the Merry Hill Shopping Centre in Brierley Hill. The 1,840 square foot store is on the Lower Mall near Waterstones. It has brought 10 jobs to the centre. The shop will aim to bring toys to life and enable children to meet Hamley's characters, including the famous Hamley Bear. There will be interactive toy demonstrations and special promotional appearances. The toy retailer joins a growing number of family brands at the centre, including Mothercare, which returned inside Boots earlier this year. Duncan Burns, marketing manager at Merryhill, said, "We are thrilled that Hamleys has opened its first store in the Black Country at Merryhill, and we know that many of our visitors will be looking forward to experiencing their world-famous toy wonderland. Hamleys is an iconic brand with an unrivalled following among parents and children from around the world, adding to our already established family brands at the centre, including the Disney store."
People living in the West Midlands can apply for tickets for the Commonwealth Games ahead of them being released to the general public. Residents across the county, including Shropshire and Staffordshire, can apply for exclusive tickets for 286 sports sessions up until July the 30th. More than 1 million tickets are available for the major sporting event in Birmingham next year, along with the opening and closing ceremonies. The landmark event will see sport hosted in Birmingham, Sandwell, Wolverhampton and Cannock Chase, among other areas such as Coventry. Matt Kidson, Director of Sport for Birmingham 2022, said Birmingham 2022 is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for residents of the West Midlands, with the games being held essentially in their backyard. We want to make sure that everyone who lives locally has a chance to experience the games, through volunteering, spectating, or soaking up the festival atmosphere. That's why we are launching a priority access ticket sale today for people with a West Midlands postcode. This is your chance to experience the biggest sporting event to be held in the UK for a decade. Ticket prices start from £8 for under 16s and from £15 for adults, and there will also be £22 tickets available for every session throughout the games, including all medal sessions. West Midlands Mayor Andy Street said, "The Commonwealth Games in Birmingham is going to be an absolutely phenomenal spectacle, and we want as many people as possible from across the West Midlands to enjoy the world-class sport and soak in the atmosphere. That's why the Games are offering priority access to tickets for those who live in the region, ahead of the main ballot opening in September. This really will be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so don't miss out."
Now we have a small piece of people's opinions regarding Dudley applying to become a city. The announcement of the bid for Dudley to become a city has been met with mixed responses from people living in and around the borough. Dudley Council bosses used Black Country Day last Wednesday to reveal the authority is putting the borough forward to become a city as a part of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations next year. For those people visiting Dudley to shop in the town centre and visit attractions such as Dudley Zoo, the bid has invoked different reactions, with some for and some against the idea. Jeremy Parks works in the town centre as a volunteer for the Black Country Food Bank, and the 67-year-old from Neverton said he loved the idea of Dudley becoming a city. He said, "I love the town and I love Dudley as it's the centre of the country, so it seems appropriate to me for city status. By doing this, I think it gives the opportunity for increased funding from various locations in the town, and it gives the town a higher status as well. There's also the civic pride which comes with calling ourselves a city, and economically, it'll be good as we'll get more tourism and have a greater appeal to people nationally." Janet Gibson from Neverton was shopping in the town with her husband, John, and the 81-year-old said she didn't like the idea. She said, "The town doesn't deserve it, as there's not much left to be proud of here, and I don't think the council have done much to improve the centre and bring in more traders. We used to be proud of our town, but there's not much here in terms of shops, and the transport system is terrible, and you can't get a bus, so I think that's a poor idea." Liam Pomeroy from Dudley was in the town to visit the Black Country Food Bank, and the 26-year-old said he was thrilled by the idea of Dudley becoming a city. He said it would be a great idea, because it's always been a small town in itself, but it would raise the profile significantly to be called a city. "It would help more people around the region to know what Dudley is like and how it is the centre of the Black Country, with lots of attractions and sights to see. It's my home, and it always will be my home, so it would be great to see it become a city." Anne Stevenson from Sedgley said she liked the idea, but the 77-year-old said work needed to be done on the town centre to make it look more like a city. She said, "It'd be good to see them bring back some of the old big department stores such as Marks and Spencer's, as the town centre looks a little empty without them. This used to be a lovely town, and I think it can still be a city as well, although it needs investment and people coming in to make it work." Michael Burton from Dudley said the town was the hub of the Black Country, with the 82-year-old saying the city status would be good economically. He said, "The town has always been the centre of the Black Country, and, as a fairly big town, I don't see why it can't keep doing that as a city. We've got a lot of great attractions and things for people to see, so I think it'd be good to become a city because of that and the investment that that will bring in as a result. The town has a lot of heritage and history, and if the places are up to it, it will help it become a city." Visitors to the area were also taking in the news of Dudley City bid, with Susie Dick from the Isle of Arran in Scotland one of those offering a view about the proposed bid. The 38-year-old said, "I think it comes down to whether becoming a city is a benefit in terms of the economic side, or whether it's more down to a nice feeling of saying you're a city. Dudley is a nice town, and I'm here to see the zoo, but is having attractions like this enough to make it a viable place as a city? I suppose it depends on what the wider benefits are, and if there are financial benefits, and if it attracts more visitors and provides renovations. Then it may be the right thing to do." Coming up next, we have our final block of local news, brought to us by Liz, Angela, Ed, Christine, and first up, we get to hear from Ian.
The new Peaky Blinders-themed bar and restaurant in Dudley Town Centre is to open on August the 9th. The office has been created by businessman and Peaky Blinders fan Tony McKeon at the refurbished Station Hotel and Banqueting Suite in Castle Hill. It is creating up to 12 jobs and has seen an investment of £250,000. Mr. McKeon said the venue's theme was about the real Birmingham Peaky Blinders and not centred around the BBC TV version of characters and events. The hotel will also offer a select number of hotel rooms following the Peaky Blinders theme. The new venue can hold a capacity of up to 250 people, and plans are in place for regular Peaky-themed entertainment evenings. The menu will be focusing on local Black Country classics like Faggots and Peas, along with modern favourites like Balti. An array of artwork from the official Peaky Blinders artist John Jones will be on display, and it will include pieces from the TV show, which is partly filmed at the nearby Black Country Living Museum. The banqueting suite has also been renovated and will be available for private hire, weddings and parties, along with regular live music events. The office bar and restaurant will also have sizeable and fresh outdoor dining space and on-site parking.
Residents and staff at a Wolverhampton retirement village are hoping to gain an award as part of the Britain in Bloom competition. A communal garden at Bushfield Court in Bilston, part of Midland Heart Retirement Living, was last year classed as outstanding by the judges. This year, everyone wanted to pay tribute to key workers and chose to enter the section classed as In Your Neighbourhood, with two main themes of showing thanks and kindness and encouraging wildlife. As part of this, they paid tribute to local businesses who had supported them through the pandemic lockdowns and the community, including local schools. A scarecrow trail was included in the design of the community gardens, and residents in the 82 bungalows and flats also ensured flowers were blooming on their patios and balconies. Maria Barley, 57, the lifestyle coach at Bushfield Court, said, "The response from local businesses, including B&Q and Morrison's when we needed supplies during the pandemic, was absolutely wonderful, and we ensured there were scarecrows in their brand colours." A local knit and natter group from St Leonard's Church also made knitted items for display in the garden. "We entered the competition for the first time in 2019 and gained an outstanding commendation, and this year we are hoping to take the title. Because of the pandemic last year and lockdowns, gardening really took off and everyone got involved. However, one resident is really hoping we can take the title, and that is Bill Simkiss, a 93-year-old double amputee who grew 98% of all the flowers from seed. At one time, he had 999 pots in the large greenhouse we have here, and we nicknamed him Compo. The communal garden is a central feature of the retirement scheme, and everyone thinks it is a delight."
A pie delivery business in the Black Country set up during COVID-19 has taken off nationally thanks to expats desperate to take a slice of home. Pete Towler, owner of Mad O'Rourke's Pie Factory in Tipton, started Pies by Post in March this year while his restaurant was shut due to the virus. Mr. Towler expected people in the region to order, but was surprised when orders came in from Edinburgh, Aberdovey, London and Padstow. He soon realised many of the orders for pies that were coming from hundreds of miles away were being made by former Black Country residents. He said, "We knew we had to do something to start bringing in revenue after a terrible year we just managed to get through. We had the kitchen facilities and the talented chefs to be able to start the pie delivery service, and Pies by Post was born. But as a new online venture, we were surprised when we started getting really far-flung orders from hundreds of miles away. I started asking people how they'd heard of us, and it turned out that almost all of them had been born in the Black Country before moving out to different areas. They'd all been to the pie factory at some point in their lives, some more regularly than others, and they were all hankering for a taste of home. It seems you can leave the Black Country, but it never leaves you." Mr. Towler said a lot of his pie deliveries were also going out closer to home, as well as nationally, adding, "It's not just people who used to live in the Black Country who are ordering deliveries. One of our regulars placed an online order for a pie delivery, and she only lives around the corner in the next street. It did make me smile, and I delivered them to her myself, but I can't give everyone that kind of personal service."
Pupils and staff at a Dudley school can now enjoy nature, relax and keep fit thanks to a nature trail and sensory garden created by 70 volunteers, which was part funded by a wealth management company. St James's Place Wealth Management Company stepped in to help with funding and volunteer workers after hearing that staff at Cateshill Primary School planned to create a special garden area. The company donated £8,000 and an investor has added a further £2,000 towards the project, which has seen £15,000 set aside from the school funds, parent contributions and money from fundraising. A two-day construction project saw the garden, nature trail and trim track created by 70 volunteers who were overseen by a team from Splash Community Projects. Kevin Orchard, 58, the Year 6 teacher and science lead at the school, said, "The whole area is almost completed. Many of our children have suffered both from mental health issues and fitness levels because of the pandemic. We wanted to give them the opportunities outdoors to both connect with nature through the nature trail, to relax in the sensory garden and to help with their mental health, and to encourage them to have a healthy lifestyle through the trim trail."
Food writer and cook Nigel Slater has described being made an OBE in recognition of his culinary career as the icing on my little cake. The 63-year-old received the honour for services to cookery and literature from the Prince of Wales in an investiture ceremony at St James's Palace. Slater spent his early years in Wolverhampton, and his memoir, Toast, The Story of a Boy's Hunger, is a poignant account of his early memories through the medium of food, ranging from Caramac bars to Arctic rolls. He lived in a detached house in Penn and attended Woodfield School. He describes the impact of bereavement and the comfort food and cooking gave him as he grew up. The book won 6 awards and was later made into a film starring Helena Bonham Carter and Freddie Highmore, as well as a touring play. Slater went on to establish himself as a popular TV cook and food writer, and he was given the honour in recognition for his service to the industry. Speaking afterwards, Slater said, "I tried to be a chef, but I wasn't a very good one. It's a different mindset for that, but it was always going to be cooking. It was always going to be about making something to eat, and that's been 35 years now. So this is lovely. This is the icing on my little cake. Really fabulous."
It's time once again to hear from Flashback Roger, who has for us some more amazing facts.
Hello everyone. I do hope that you're all well and raring to hear this week's rash of data that I've unearthed for you. There should be some interesting conversation pieces to chew over with your friends whenever you meet. So here we go. Now then, did you know that the Mona Lisa has no eyebrows? Some say that there were once, but they were either faded or painted over, or they were inadvertently removed during cleaning. It's just one of the many mysteries surrounding the enigmatic artwork. Mind you, nobody speculated that it may be that you just had a heavy plucking session. The most stolen book from public libraries is the Guinness Book of Records, so it holds the record for being the most often stolen tome. I do hope that they have issued a certificate to themselves, as they do for other world records. So how about this for a conundrum? The sixth sheep's sick is said to be the toughest tongue twister in the English language. I'll say it again slowly, word by word, so you can practice. The sixth sick sheep's sixth sheep sick. Got it? Good. Elephants are the only mammals that can't jump. The bones in their legs all point downward and don't have the necessary spring to allow them to leap. Most animals that jump can do so as a technique to avoid predators, and jumping isn't something that elephants need to do to avoid such natural danger. Inventor Margaret Knight had an invention stolen by a man who claimed that there was no way a woman could have invented such a machine. She finally received a patent in 1871 for a machine that could produce the square-bottomed paper bags that we all are used to and never think twice about. Another lady inventor, Stephanie Kwolek, in 1966, who while researching for strong but lightweight plastics to use in car tyres, Stephanie Kwolek discovered what would become known as Kevlar. This revolutionary fibre has saved countless lives in the form of bulletproof vests and is also used in numerous applications such as bridge cables, canoes and frying pans. Well, that's a mixed bag of conversation stoppers to add to your repertoire this week, and I hope that you'll practice the tongue twister for your party piece. But for me, well, I've got to find something different for mine, as my ventriloquist act ain't believable anymore since I don't have to wear a mask. But for now, this is Rog saying ta-ra for now. Ta-ra!
Thanks for those amazing facts, Roger. Now move over to Mina, who asks for us a weather update.
The weather for this week looks to be very wet as last week's heatwave comes to an end. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, hovering typically around 22 degrees. UV levels are expected to be medium throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:19 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:09 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday, 23rd of July, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 25 degrees. On Saturday, 24th of July, we have thundery showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 23 degrees. On Sunday, 25th and Monday, 26th of July, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 22 degrees. On Tuesday, 27th and Wednesday, 28th of July, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 23 degrees. And finally, on Thursday, 29th of July, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 22 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks for that weather update, Mina. Now we move on to our Sounds of Nature feature.
The spotted crake is a small water bird, similar in size to a starling. Breeding adults have a brown back with dark streaks, a blue-eyed face and an olive-brown breast, all covered with white flecks and spots. They swim with a jerky action, like that of a moorhen. If surprised in the open, they run for cover or jump up and flutter away with legs dangling. They probe with their bill in mud or shallow water, also picking up food by sight. They mainly eat insects and aquatic animals.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we get the latest football news, brought to us by Ian.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Wolves began their pre-season schedule with a 1-0 friendly loss to Crewe Alexandra as Raul Jimenez made his return from injury after 230 days on the sidelines. Laja named a largely experienced starting 11 for his first Wolves game in charge, opting for a 4-4-2 formation. With several first-team players yet to join the group following the European Championships and Johnny Castro Otto, Pedro Neto and Daniel Podence injured, Laja did start several of the stars available to him. Francisco Trincao, who recently signed on loan from Barcelona, lined up alongside Fabio Silva and Jimenez, who made his return following an 8-month layoff due to his fractured skull injury. On an extremely warm afternoon at the Alexandra Stadium, the hosts welcomed Jimenez back to a football field with a special message from the stadium announcer, which was applauded by the Crew fans. However, young midfielder Taylor Perry was arguably Wolves' best player in a drab first half showing in which Crew looked most lively. After introducing 8 academy players at half-time, the youngsters started poorly and quickly fell behind from a Christopher Long tap-in. The much-changed Wolves side did begin to look after the ball better as the half progressed, but failed to threaten going forward and were condemned to defeat on their first pre-season outing. Off the pitch, Wolves have confirmed the signing of José Sá from Olympiacos on a 5-year deal. The 28-year-old goalkeeper arrives at Molineux for a fee of £6.8 million following Rui Patricio's £9.8 million sale to Roma. Agent Jorge Mendes, who acts as an advisor to Wolves, has been extensively involved in the negotiations as he represents both players and the managers at Wolves, Roma and Olympiacos. Bruno Lage, José Mourinho and Pedro Martins. Wolves technical director Scott Sellers said, José is someone who is very much coming into his peak years as a goalkeeper and has always been high up on our target list. He's aggressive when coming for crosses. He commands his penalty area, has excellent distribution, and he's a very proactive goalkeeper and will be an important part in how we want to play under Bruno. The Baggies came away 1-0 victors in their first pre-season fixture away at Woking. In what proved to be an intriguing first half, Albion showed glimpses of how they are likely to play under their new boss. The Baggies enjoyed almost total control for the opening 45 minutes, with Woking offering little in the way of an attacking threat. And Ismail's men moved the ball around well, with central midfielders Livermore and Mawat under clear instruction to get the ball wide. It led to the Baggies consistently getting into dangerous areas. But that bit of magic you need in the final third just wasn't there, with their final pass constantly letting them down. There was a rustiness to their play that kept letting them down at the crucial moment. In the second half, new boss Ismail made wholesale changes, with 4 youngsters introduced along with Cedric Kipre and Kenneth Zahor. The pattern of the game remained unchanged, though, with Albion continuing to knock on the door. Grant powered a strike from the edge of the box straight at the keeper. The forward, who was causing all sorts of problems down the left side, then sent in a dangerous cross that Tulloch came a whisker away from converting. From an Albion perspective, there had been positive performances all over the park, but Woking put up a plucky display to keep the score level. However, there could be no doubt overall Albion deserved to win, and they finally broke the deadlock with what was virtually the last kick of the game. Zahor was tripped in the box with referee Charles Breakspear pointing to the spot, and the striker dusted himself down to powerfully find the bottom corner from 12 yards. Earlier in the week, Albion sealed the loan signing of Brighton defender Matt Clark. The centre-back becomes the second first-team signing of the Valerian Ismail era. Clark joined Brighton from Portsmouth for around £4 million back in 2019, but he has spent the last 2 seasons impressing on loan in the Championship with Derby. "I'm really excited by the challenge," Clark said. "As a player, you play football to achieve success. This is a club which is looking to bounce straight back to the Premier League and has been promoted from this division plenty of times before. I want to give my all to help Albion achieve success this season."
Thanks for that football news, Ian. Now we move on to Colin, who asked us a feature on pronunciation. I hope I said that right.
Hello, I'm Colin. I don't know about you, but I'm one of those people who winces when I hear a word being mispronounced, despite the fact that I'm guilty of falling into the that-doesn't-sound-right trap myself from time to time. Somebody, no doubt with too much time on their hands, has carried out a survey which highlights many of the everyday words in common usage that are regularly mispronounced. Well, let's start with mispronunciation. Oh, I better stop there for a moment because I should have said mispronunciation. See how easy it is to get it wrong? The survey asked 2,000 people, oh, by the way, I wasn't one of them, were you, which words they thought were among, or should that be amongst, the most commonly that are mispronounced. Unsurprisingly, there are quite a few to choose from. You're in your local coffee shop. You can't move for coffee shops these days, can you? How many times have you heard someone ask the barista, not the barrister, for an espresso, when what they really want is an espresso? And while we're in the coffee shop, don't start me on can I get instead of may I have? Drives me up the wall. They probably say, if challenged, that it doesn't matter. But in my book, it not only probably does, it most certainly does. Let's move on specifically to, I mean, of course, specifically to words like Arctic instead of Arctic. Oddly enough, in its original form in English, the word was actually pronounced Arctic. Incidentally, it's nothing to do with the abbreviation we use today for articulated lorries. I just thought I'd mention that. Arctic was once used by a special section of society, the upper classes, in reference to Pole Arctic. Why they couldn't just have referred to the South Pole, I don't know. And, talking of special, lots of us, well, not me, obviously, perish the thought, use specially when we mean especially. But hold your horses, folks. Have you ever heard of someone called Chaucer? Writing about his motley crew of pilgrims on their way to Canterbury, he tells us that this disparate group were, and I quote, specially from every shire's end. Well, if it's good enough for Jeff, it's good enough for me. It's not only the way in which words are pronounced that can cause problems. It's how we inadvertently mix words up. People say damp squid when they mean damp squib. Although, to be fair, squids are usually damp or even soaking wet. And then there's hone in on instead of home in on. President George Bush, who wasn't perhaps the sharpest knife in the box when it came to the correct use of a word, was quite happy to tell us all about the nuclear threat, rather than the nuclear threat. Well, let's not be too harsh on Mr. B, we all make mistakes. Putting the emphasis in the wrong place also leads to words being mispronounced. Medicine is two syllables, medicine, and parliament has three, parliament. There's also the bane of my life, the eighth letter of the alphabet. Well, just think about it for a moment. What is it? It's H, not H. What hope is there for the rest of us when even some members of the cast in Line of Duty couldn't get it right? Directions also take a battering with words like southern being pronounced southern, as do metals like iron, which generally comes out as iron. And you definitely want to avoid saying definitely. Let's have a look at some other words that aren't always said correctly. Etc. is a good one, usually thrown into a conversation as etc., as is asterisk, which can often sound like that French cartoon character, Asterix. In conversation, you might want to make a moot point, but settle instead for mute. That raises a few eyebrows. And on the sporting front, people often say triathlon, adding an extra A, when in fact it's actually triathlon. Confusing, isn't it? After all, well, who really cares? Before I go, and this is nothing to do with mispronunciation, I want to tell you about another word that's crept into more and more news broadcasts, and particularly interviews. And every time I hear it, much to my wife's amusement, I find myself shouting uncontrollably at the television or radio. Have you guessed what the word is yet? No? It's impact. People are constantly being asked how they've been impacted by something or other. Or interviewees themselves are more than happy to announce to the world how they've been impacted by some drama or not in their lives. Whatever happened to the word affect? Aren't people affected by anything anymore? I will grudgingly concede that something can make an impact. but I'd still prefer to hear what the effect of something was. But impact or impacted? No thanks. Having got that off my chest, there isn't anything more to say. There's another one, you see. Anything. It's anything. Well, thanks for listening, if you still are. I'm now going for a lie down, not a lay down.
Cheers for that, Colin. Now we move over to Craig and his Black Country joke book.
Hello, I'm Craig. I'm going to tell you some jokes from your Black Country joke book. Did you hear what caused all that traffic in Wolverhampton last week? It was stationary on the Penn Road. Here's another one for you. A Tipton bloke took his dog to a jeweller and asked whether he could make a gold statue of him. Sure, said the jeweller, 18 carat. No, he said, chewing the bone. And finally, I was in the supermarket the other day and someone was chucking milk and cheese around and I thought, how dare he? I'm Craig and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thank you, those, Craig. Good stuff. Now move over to Mina. Ask us the answers to this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. What facial feature is missing on the Mona Lisa? And the answer? Her eyebrows. Question 2. Which book is stolen from libraries the most? And the answer here is the Guinness Book of Records. Question 3. How many sick sheep did the sick sheikh have? And the answer is 6. Question 4. What animal cannot jump? And of course, it's the elephant. Question 5. Who patented a paper bag making machine in 1871? And the answer here is Margaret Knight. And question 6. What did Stephanie Kwolek discover in 1966? And the answer here is Kevlar. How did you do? Fantastic, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to guess the sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of someone jumping on a trampoline. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. Rowley Regis Grammar School sat atop the Rowley Hills, overlooking the Stour Valley with magnificent views across Clent and beyond. On a hot summer's day, the heat inversion caused the emissions from Round Oak steel powders in Brawley Hill to engulf all in an orange dome set against a backdrop of green rolling hills and powder blue skies dotted with cotton ball clouds. It probably blighted more people with respiratory problems than 20 fags a day, but it did look stunning. And the school was itself an impressive-looking edifice when viewed from the orange glow upwards. It was brand new, modern, and a pinnacle of local educational attainment of its time. The project started life down in the valley in Wright's Lane, Old Hill, using Victorian premises vacated by the local central school. It became a grammar school in 1948. After persistent lobbying by the headmaster, Mr. George T. Lloyd, that the premises were unfit, the new school was built in Halls Lane, Rowley Regis, and opened in September 1962. It remained for a mere 13 years until Sandwell Metropolitan Borough Council closed it in July 1975, as part of a phasing out of grammar schools in favour of comprehensive education. After further alternate use, by 2008 this short-lived seat of learning had been demolished entirely and redeveloped such that little trace of the original remains. How times and attitudes change, and it seems that for some the very notion of grammar schools now sticks in the craw like cockfighting or eating red meat. On reflection, since the concept of grammars was rooted in churning out a steady stream of administrators to oversee the colonies of an empire that no longer existed, they may have a point. Even so, as a pupil from 1965 through to the class of 1972, I was fortunate and rather proud to undertake all of my secondary education there and to attain my modest clutch of O and A levels, as they were then known, before moving on. I use the word fortunate advisedly. I was fortunate, not privileged. Very few of my council house counterparts would ever consider ourselves that, and it was but for the support of my decidedly working class parents that I ever got there, let alone stayed the course. An expression attributable to several, but notably George Bernard Shaw, is that youth is wasted on the young. That being so, then mea culpa. Although in my defence, no more so than any other teenager from the past 1,000 generations, nothing changes. The challenge is more to recognise and accept when youth has receded and there is less life remaining than what has gone before. Armed with such critical reflection, one may begin to atone for careless extravagances of the past and perhaps gain valued insight into what this life thing is all about. But back to my grammar school and the man who spearheaded the drive for it. The formidable George T. Lloyd, whose reputation as an educator was writ large. He was also a justice of the peace, which likely manifested itself in his approach to discipline. To the pupils of Rowley Grammar, he was known universally as the Gaffer and was held in a combination of dread fear and unquestioned respect. To our parents, I suspect his setting the bar high gave comforting affirmation that their charges were in capable hands. Mr. Lloyd was a stickler for early morning assembly, that compulsory period of pious Christian readings, solemn music, prayers, songs, and an address by the man himself before the school day began in earnest. How many schools still do that? Anyway, it was one such morning address in 1970 that the man himself gravely informed us that Bertrand Russell had died. Pause for reverent silence. Back to reality. Bertrand who? I pondered for a while before returning to the metaphorical shallow end where I splashed irreverently with my contemporaries, as one of that age does, without giving second glance towards the deep end where so much more lay waiting, but which brings responsibilities for self-determination. Perhaps that defines the transition from youthful braggadocio to mature contemplation, that hurdle between the shallows and the depths. We all handle it in our own way. For me, it has been an evolving recognition that the works of the great thinkers may hold the key to another door that I now need to negotiate in my continuing travels along Shakespeare's mortal coil. There's no compulsion to do so, but it is all too easy to become stuck in a comfortable rut. So, I began to familiarise myself, become acquainted, you understand, I claim no more intellectual rigour than that, with the thoughts of the great philosophers. I quickly learned philosophy comprises many subgroups: logic, metaphysics, existentialism, ethics, epistemology, aesthetics, the list goes on. I'm also more impressed by those who maintain an unbroken line of reasoning without the need to introduce the concept of a god to bridge difficult conceptual gaps. Now, this should not be taken as indicative of agnosticism. I simply find it unconvincing to develop strands of coherent thought that are then held together by the glue of dubious deities, the existence of which by definition cannot be proven. But let me not digress. Where does this fit into my tale? Well, it's a tale of pure coincidence, since I was minding my business strolling round my adopted home of Hay on Wye recently, when I stumbled across a hardback book in one of the town's numerous bookshops. Russell remembered, is a charming account written in 1970 by fellow philosopher Rupert Crawshay Williams, who came to know Russell well in the final 25 years of his life. And remarkably, although by this time Russell was already 75, he was still yet to harvest some of his finest crops. Escorted back to my school days, the front cover sparked me to remember Russell too, and on impulse, I bought it for the princely sum of a couple of quid. It was that same day, shortly after acquiring the book, I realised that the gaffer's announcement of Russell's death on the 2nd of February 1970 found me here exactly 50 years later, almost to the day, making my move over that hurdle, my youthful disdain at last confined to where it should henceforth remain, in the past. And it was quite cathartic. Over the next few days, I devoured Russell Remembered and realised that the early part of my life overlapped with that of a genius, the greatest philosopher this country, possibly the world, has ever produced. What's even more uncanny is that he was born just a short jaunt down the road in Monmouth and spent time with the Clough Ellis family at Port Merion, a favourite haunt of mine. Bertrand Arthur William Russell, 3rd Earl Russell, Order of Merit, Fellow of the Royal Society, 1872 to 1970, was a philosopher, logician, mathematician, historian, writer, essayist, social critic, political activist, and Nobel laureate. In the early 20th century, Russell led the British revolt against idealism. He's one of the founders of analytical philosophy. He's widely held to be one of the 20th century's premier logicians and co-wrote Principia Mathematica, an attempt to create a logical basis for mathematics. Russell was a prominent anti-war activist and went to prison for his pacifism during World War I. In 1950, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature, quote, in recognition of his varied and significant writings in which he champions humanitarian ideals and freedom of thought. One of his protégés was a young Ludwig Wittgenstein, the harbour of a ferocious intellect that anyone except the cognoscenti usually finds impenetrable. Russell's monumental A History of Western Philosophy, published in 1945, is an examination of Western philosophy from the pre-Socratic era to the early 20th century. It attracted some criticism for lack of depth, particularly from the post-Cartesian period, but nevertheless became a magnum opus that has remained in print ever since. When Russell was awarded the Nobel Prize, A History of Western Philosophy was cited as one of the books that won him the award, and its success secured an income through the latter part of his life. His eloquence is as mesmerising as it is incisive. Here are a few examples. On his views of the existence of God, he clarifies his stance effortlessly. I do not pretend to be able to prove that there is no God. I equally cannot prove that Satan is a fiction. The Christian God may exist, so may the gods of Olympus, or of ancient Egypt, or of Babylon. But no one of these hypotheses is more probable than any other. They lie outside the region of even probable knowledge, and therefore there is no reason to consider any of them. It is not difficult to see why I quickly warmed to this man. As for definition, the point of philosophy is to start with something so simple as to not seem to be worth stating and to end with something so paradoxical that no one will ever believe it. And this, even now, a lesson for our times. To teach how to live without certainty and yet without being paralysed by hesitation is perhaps the chief thing that philosophy in our age can still do for those who study it. Learning is a series of events that brings about a relatively permanent change in behaviour. It evidently need not be instantaneous, and 50 years down the line, my early exposure to Russell has brought about, albeit belatedly, a relatively permanent change in behaviour that has realigned my own direction of travel. In other words, I have learnt. For those who are now in their teens and splashing in the shallows with energetic detachment, well, youth is still wasted on the young. Yet they are young just once, so let them enjoy it. And please do not let us be too envious of their good fortune in still being at the distant end of the pool in which we, too, once splashed in abandon. And that, I would suggest, is a conundrum that ought to be addressed by any education system that seeks to embrace both immediacy and longevity. The balance between what is taught now in preparation for impending adulthood and that which is subliminally retained and which may offer sustenance more than half a lifetime down the line, when the physicality may have changed, but the soul still requires nourishment. Ah, well, it's a never-ending cycle that I do not envisage deviating too much in the foreseeable future. Boys and girls will continue to be boys and girls. In the meantime, as age inevitably creeps upon me, and it seems every day more bits start to creak, I draw comfort from the words of Winston Churchill. We are happier in many ways when we are old than when we were young. The young sow wild oats, the old grow sage.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!